One might even think the Bhagavatam is all about Lord Brahma. He's in the very first verse. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya janmadyasya yatonvayar itaratashchate shvavigyaswarat tene brahma hridayadikavaye muyanti yat surayoho tejo vari mridam yata vinamaya yatra trishargamrsha dhamnasvena sada nirasta kuhakam satyam param dhimahi. So the verse begins, we are meditating upon that from whom everything has come, janmadyasya yata anvayad itaratascha tishva vigyasvarat, who is directly and indirectly aware of everything, who imparted Brahma, spiritual knowledge, into the heart of the Adikavi, the original poet, Lord Brahma. So there he is. He's right there in the first verse, Srimad Bhagavatam. Second canto, here he is again, playing an important role. Third canto, fourth canto, seventh canto, there he is, giving blessings to Hiranyakashipu. Eighth canto, settling disputes between the demigods and the demons, and he's everywhere in the whole Bhagavatam. The main four verses of the Bhagavatam are spoken to him. And so here, and then he's coming up again in the 11th canto. That's what I'm going to get to. How much time do I have? All right, I'm going to have to move quickly. So this verse, Krishna, in the form of a cowherd boy, in Gopavesh, in cowherd dress, says, O Brahma, just follow this conclusion by fixed concentration of mind, and no pride will disturb you, either in the partial nor in the final devastation. And in the Sanskrit, it's Navi Muhyati. You'll never be bewildered. Karhichit. Anything like complacence. Navi Muhyati Karhichit. Bhavan Kalpa Vikalpeshu. Either in any form of destruction. Also that word reminds me, the 10 main topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam are coming up in the next chapter. Let's see, what's a creation? What's sarga? Visarga. So visarga is all about Brahma. He's like the second category in the 10 main categories of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the rest of it is not directly about Brahma, but about his sons. Narada Muni is everywhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He is, and then the four Kumaras, and then here is Narada Muni sitting in the first presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. First public presentation, Shukadev Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. There's Shukadev Goswami's father, Vyasadeva, watching, and he's saying, that's my son. Look at him go. And then Narada is there. He's the guru of Vyasadeva. And he's watching Narada. He's watching Vyasadeva, watching his son, saying, yeah, we got a good thing going. And Prabhupada's always referring to Narada, and he's saying, we are in the line from Narada Muni. We are in the line from Brahma. We should follow Brahma's example. We are in Brahma's family, Brahma Parivara. Okay, and so he gets this blessing. You're never going to become bewildered. But then we see, sometimes he does. When the earth had fallen into the ocean, he's puzzling, what do I do about this? How do I take care of this? And while he's thinking, Varaha appears and takes care of him. So it's like a real human thing. We get to see Brahma becoming puzzled. But almost every time something happens to, the Lord comes and sets things straight. When he's puzzled, who is this? With all these boys eating with his left hand, eating food off of other people's plates. He's breaking all of the rules of etiquette in the Vedas. How can this be? How can this be the same Lord that instructed me? And so he does a little experiment and realizes I've made a mistake, comes back right away. And the Lord reveals everything to him again, and then he says, oh yeah, I get it. He offers all of these prayers, which are essential prayers for us in our lineage, in chapter 14. And again, here's another little story about Brahma that's not as well known. Okay, 11th canto, got to pay really close attention. Krishna is speaking to Uddhava, and he's explaining how to rise above the influence of the senses, rise above the influence of the modes of nature, how it goes about, and then he concludes by saying, the actual system, yoga system as taught by my devotees, headed by Sanaka Kumar, is simply this. Having withdrawn the mind from all other objects, one should directly and appropriately absorb it in me. Okay, so similar to what we just studied here in the four main verses. Everything is Krishna. You see Krishna everywhere. This is directly and appropriately focusing the mind on Krishna. This is the purpose of the yoga system. Then Sri Uddhava said, at what time and in what form did you instruct the science of yoga to Sanaka and others? I now desire to know about these things. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, once the mental sons of Lord Brahma, namely the sages headed by Sanaka, inquired from their father about the difficult subject matter of the supreme goal of yoga. They said, O Lord, people's minds are naturally attracted to material sense objects, and similarly, the sense objects in the form of desire enter within the mind. Therefore, how can a person who desires liberation, who desires to cross over activities of sense gratification, destroy this mutual relationship between the sense objects and the mind? Please explain this to us. Brahma seriously contemplated the question of his sons. The intelligence of Brahma, however, was affected by his own activities of creation, and thus he could not discover the essential answer to this question. Does everyone understand the question? The mind is always thinking of sense objects. Sense objects in the form of desire enter into the mind, so they're like related to each other. How do you separate the two? Brahma couldn't find a good answer for that, because he had been so caught up in his own activities of creation. Lord Brahma desired to attain the answer to the question that was puzzling him, and thus he fixed his mind in me, the Supreme Lord. At that time, in my form of Hamsa, I became visible to Lord Brahma. So this is the purport that we just read. The mundane wranglers, they're struggling, like, desire, yeah, just fight with it. Get it out of the brain, and it doesn't work that way. Brahma instead surrenders to Krishna. All right, Krishna, you got to help me here. I don't know how to do this. At that time, in my form of Hamsa, I became visible to Lord Brahma. Thus seeing me, the sages, placing Brahma in the lead, came forward and worshipped my lotus feet. Then they frankly asked me, who are you? And then there's a whole, he goes into a long thing about this. My dear Uddhava, the sages, being eager to understand the ultimate truth of the yoga system, thus inquired from me. Now please hear as I explain that which I spoke unto the sages. So in the form of Hamsa, he says, my dear Brahmins, if, when asking me who I am, you believe that I am also a jiva soul and that there is no ultimate difference between us, since all souls are ultimately one without individuality, then how is your question possible or appropriate? ultimately, what is the real situation or resting place, both of yourselves and of me? All right, so when someone asks you who you are, please pull you over. Say, all right, who are you? And you give them an answer like that. What's going to happen? But this is really high level stuff. You've got the four Kumaras, you got Brahma, and then you got the supreme source of all intelligence, the one who gives understanding, the one who is understanding, who's the goal of knowledge. Did anyone follow that at all, what I just read? Okay, you got it. Everybody else is, I'll read it one more time. Okay, hang on. So if you catch it, it's going to be good. Otherwise, you're going to have a hard time getting through this. If, when asking me who I am, you believe that I am also a jiva soul and that there is no ultimate difference between us, since all souls are ultimately one without individuality, then how is your question possible or appropriate? All right, so if you think I am you, you're me, we are all Brahman, we're all spirit, which is true, but there is some differentiation. But if you're on that platform thinking there is no differentiation, then what's the purpose of your question? Ultimately, what is the real situation or resting place, both of yourselves and of me? Next verse. If by asking me, who are you, you are referring to the material body, then I must point out that all material bodies are constituted of five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Thus you should have asked, who are you five? If you consider that all material bodies are ultimately one, being constituted essentially of the same elements, then your question is still meaningless, since there would be no deep purpose in distinguishing one body from another. Thus it appears that in asking my identity, you are merely speaking words without any real meaning or purpose. Okay. So if you see Krishna, don't ask him, who are you? You're going to get an answer like this. But he's making a point. He's building his point, building his case. Next verse. Within this world, whatever is perceived by the mind, speech, eyes, or other senses is me alone and nothing besides me. All of you, please understand this by a straightforward analysis of the facts. Okay, does this sound familiar? Anyone want to recite the verse? Did anyone memorize that verse? From the four main shlokas? Within this world, whatever is perceived by the mind, speech, eyes, or other senses is me alone and nothing besides me. Aham evasam evagre nanyad yat sadasat. So anything that you see is nothing other than me. Okay, all of you, please understand this by a straightforward analysis of the facts. My dear sons, okay, here's where he answers their question. How do you extricate these sense objects from the mind? My dear sons, the mind has a natural proclivity to enter into the material sense objects, and similarly, the sense objects enter into the mind. But both this material mind and the sense objects are merely designations that cover the spirit soul, who is part and parcel of me. Okay, so he answered it there. You don't really get it, though, by reading it. You got to go into the purport, and that unpacks it. So in the purport, Vishwanath says, since it is the natural function of the material mind and sense objects to mutually interact, how can you possibly endeavor to prevent such a mutual attraction? Since both the material mind and sense objects are useless, they both should be completely given up. And thus, automatically, you will be free from all material duality. All right, still doesn't make sense. how do you just give it up? I mean, we would like to. We've been trying for 50 years. Sridhar Swami says the same thing in different words. It is not possible to separate the material mind from the sense objects because they naturally exist together. Therefore, by intelligence, one must realize one's eternal form as spirit soul, part and parcel of the Lord, and completely reject the bogus material mentality. One who revives his original spiritual mentality becomes automatically detached from material attraction. Therefore, one should cultivate knowledge of the falsity of sense gratification. By devotional service to the Lord, such detachment and intelligence automatically awaken, and by full understanding of one's original spiritual form, one is properly situated in eternal consciousness. Okay, we've all heard this thousands of times, but hearing it in this context, here's the four Kumaras, here's Lord Brahma trying to figure out, how do we get the mind to stop dwelling on sense objects? They can't come up with an answer. I mean, come on, Sanat Kumar, Lord Brahma, they can't figure it out. They have to bring in help. This swan walks in, and it's not an ordinary swan. They ask, who are you? And this talking swan starts giving all of these lessons. And then he says, you can't extricate them. It's a waste of time. Don't even try. What you do is you elevate yourself above this. And then, do we have time? Oh boy, I'm going to try. Then he goes further. And he says, and he gives this example to help us understand how we are separate. And we've heard this example before. And only after reading it here did I really get this. Okay, he talks about waking, sleeping, and deep sleep are the three functions of the intelligence and are caused by the modes of material nature. The living entity within the body is ascertained to possess characteristics different from these three states and thus remains as a witness to them. Okay, we've all heard this before. Wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. Everyone heard this? Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Heard about this and like, why are they bringing this up? What does that have to do with what we're talking about here? What's the purpose of this whole thing? And in reading this, it compares those to the three modes of nature. I never got that before. Wakefulness is like sattva. Dreaming is rajas, mode of passion. And deep sleep?
Tamagun.
Yeah, that's pretty obvious. But then there's the turiya, the fourth stage, which is above those. I never really understood. Why do they keep talking about this wakefulness? I don't follow it. So that's what it's about. There is a fourth stage by which that is who we are. We are observing. I'm aware that I'm awake now. And then when you're dreaming, sometimes you're aware that you're dreaming. You're aware that you exist. And then when you're completely out of it, when you wake up, it's like, I was really out of it. That was a good sleep. You remember. So you're observing all of those things, but you're different. You are the observer. And that's what he's getting at. In the next verse, let's see if it helps us bring this in. The spirit soul is trapped in the bondage of material intelligence. Okay, we are trapped by the three modes of nature, which are influencing our intelligence. These award him constant engagement in the illusory modes of nature. But I am the fourth stage of consciousness, beyond wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. Becoming situated in me, the soul should give up the bondage of material consciousness. Okay, becoming situated in me. Again, it's the same thing we've been hearing all along. Just think of Krishna, chant Hare Krishna, serve Krishna, you rise above the modes of nature. Same story repeated over and over again. At that time, the living entity will automatically renounce the material sense objects and the material mind. The false ego of the living entity places him in bondage and awards him exactly the opposite of what he really desires. Therefore, an intelligent person should give up his constant anxiety to enjoy material life and remain situated in the Lord, who is beyond the functions of material consciousness. Okay, for some reason I've got this page marked way over here. All right, and after speaking all this, he says, O best of the Brahmins, please know that I am the supreme shelter of the yoga system, analytic philosophy, virtuous action, truthful religious principles, power, beauty, fame, and self-control. Okay, I am the supreme shelter of all of these things. So yoga, analytic study, this is where it's all leading. This is where it all comes from. Krishna is sheltering it. And I think I've run out of time. So is there any questions or discussion? Yes.
I think you mentioned that it wasn't necessary to read or study or perform sacrifices because by Krishna's mercy you can get the full realization. But isn't that study, which is considered a bit of an austerity, isn't that what attracts Krishna to give the mercy? Or is it just, I mean, is it not just blind mercy? I mean, study is necessary and sacrifice is necessary as well, right?
Yes, thanks for bringing that up. I felt like, oh, I should have stayed on that a little longer. Yeah, we take on some austerity for the purpose. Tapo divyam putraka jena sattvam shodyed yasmad brahmasokyam tvanantam. Yeah, so we should take on some tapasya, but divyam for spiritual purpose, just like the austerity of going out tomorrow to Jacksonville, Rath Yatra, those that go early to help set up and distribute books and all of that. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, but initially it's an austerity, like getting in the car, getting out and going. Once you're there and it's going, you're getting a taste for it. And that's, like you said, Krishna giving you a little, revealing himself to you. Remember back in the old days, the old Sankirtan newsletter talked about how when you go on book distribution, when you go out on Sankirtan, yeah, it's hard to get yourself out the door. But once you get out there and you start going, you're shaking hands with people, you're actually shaking hands with Lord Chaitanya. Remember devotees saying that? And Sankirtan itself is blissful because it's giving you connection to Lord Chaitanya, which is blissful. Okay, anything more on that? Did that?
I'll go home and study.
And study, yes. Study is good. Take on the austerity. You may not feel like it. I remember one devotee years ago saying every night before he went to sleep, no matter how tired he was, he would read a chapter of Krishna book. Prayers by the personified Vedas, so that would be a... Yeah, that's a bit much. Yeah, but he said he would do it, and yeah, you force yourself to do it, and okay, yeah. Go ahead.
I don't know if you can find the exact sentence you were reading in the 11th canto. I believe where Srila Prabhupada says, or was it a verse, that you desire something, but you get the exact opposite of what you desire.
Yeah.
But isn't Krishna fulfilling everyone's desire? How is it that the opposite comes?
I just opened right up to it. It was your desire. I opened it up, and it's in the verse. Text 29, chapter 13, canto 11. 11, 13, 29. Ahankara kritam bandham atmanortha viparyayam. And there it is. Viparyaya means just the opposite. Vidvam nirvidya samsara chintam turiye stitas tyajit. So there it is in Sanskrit. It's not. No question about it. The false ego of the living entity places him in bondage and awards him exactly the opposite of what he really desires. So it's false ego. We want something. We want happiness, and we're running, chasing after an illusion, just like the animal running in the desert for the mirage. I want water, running. I want happiness. Senses drive us. Senses say, you'll find happiness here. And we chase after them, and it gives us just the opposite of what we want. Therefore, an intelligent person should give up his constant anxiety to enjoy material life and remain situated in the Lord, who is beyond the functions of material consciousness.
When he was counseling to his mother after he come back from Sylhet, his wife passed away. Many verses. One of the verses he says, Jiva koti, jiva sa iccha koti bancha kare, jai Krishna iccha kare, shei phal dhare. Jivas, living entities, are desiring many things. But from within the heart, the super soul sees what he is eligible for and his sanction. When the sanction, then Maya will manifest. But if it doesn't sanction, doesn't matter how much we pray, doesn't matter how powerful Maya is, nothing will work. So everything is by the sanction of the Lord, according to Mahaprabhu on that. So from that angle, makes satisfactory. Okay, I don't deserve, I don't have a credit, I won't get it.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a whole discussion of do we wait for mercy or do we endeavor, and do we endeavor to get things done? So our real endeavor is to get mercy. That's what we work hard for. That's all we can. Yeah, we can work hard to make a nice, we can cut the lawn and do things so that there won't be so many mosquitoes, make a more pleasant situation, but our real endeavor is endeavor for mercy.
But you know, it could be, I'm not sure, in the morning walk in New York when Prabhupada was speaking,
one gentleman in the Prospect Park, he was splitting the bread and throwing to those dark. Yeah. And one duck was making a lot of noise, and he's giving more. And Prabhupada noticed that, and he asked, why this duck is getting more than the others? So they say, oh, he's making too much noise. Prabhupada said, therefore, if you chant more loudly, if you endeavor a lot, Krishna will give you. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a yes, we have to endeavor. Those who are endeavoring a lot, they will get more mercy. That's how I find it. It's the same thing with Vishnu Jan Maharaj's conversation with Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, you are taking it, you are appreciating. But I'm giving to everybody, not everybody is taking or appreciating. So it's like that, we have our part from that angle. It's not just
Krishna is not merciful.
Mm-hmm. So the question would be how to put ourselves in front of that. And how to stay there, always being the loud duck. The loud duck gets the bread.
Association of the another loud duck.
Hmm?
Association of another loud duck.
Oh, that's a good idea. Just hang out with the other loud duck.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Those who are enthusiastic, we are with them, and we also feel enthusiastic.
Okay. Loud ducks. That would be a good title for something, an essay.
You gotta be careful.
Loud ducks club.
You gotta be careful what you're loud duck about, though.
A Okay, so I had this epiphany here.
Let's not get too loud.
Yeah, well, it depends on the audience, you know, different time and place. But we say Krishna fulfills all desires, but then Krishna has his own desires. And one thing we know is he has a sense of humor. So maybe sometimes he just wants to see if we can take a joke. If you feel like he's not fulfilling desires, you can be the opposite.
But one thing we should add, it will satisfy the audience.
There's a famous verse that Prabhupada took out from Chaitanya Charitamrita. In at least I found two places in his commentary, Prabhupada put those. Anna kami jodi kare Krishna ra bhajan, naam agitehya Krishna den se charan. Krishna kahe ami bigya, murkhya vishay kena diva, sacharanamrita diya vishay gulaiva. These are famous verses. So Prabhupada put this in his purport. The reason he said, if someone comes to Krishna, even for a wrong reason, he's asking for poison, but he needs a nectar. But Krishna thinks, I am intelligent, he has come to me. So Krishna will make an arrangement that he will drink that nectar instead, even though he didn't come for the nectar. So that's very satisfying.
Swacharanamrita, something.
Yeah, Vishaya Gulaiva. Those are very good.
Yeah, and it's a verse in the fifth canto that it's practically saying the same thing.
Yes.
And that's where he quotes that.
But my own experience that it's not exactly like a nectarian in the beginning. Krishna will purify, but you may experience the pain of purification.
Yeah.
It's called hitting and hammering.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, we, you know, Krishna's our best friend, and he gets to that realization, which is easy to say. He knows more about us than we do.
Yes.
You know, and he's working with us. Help us. So it's not like, geez, I didn't get the candy when I went to the candy store. There must not be a God. You know, I mean, maybe you shouldn't, you know, be bad for your rock and teeth. So, you know, that happens all the time. So Krishna gives us what we need. And he has a sense of humor.
He's been doing this for a long time.
Yeah,
he knows what he's been doing.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing.
Yes.
But sometimes I wonder.
Thank you.
All right, Srimad Bhagavatam, keep Jai, Srila Prabhupada, keep Jai.